Welcome, friends, to another episode of Mum Says It's My Turn. It's me, your best bud, Fraser. And today I've got backup, which is very exciting. My good friend, Ian. Welcome, Ian.
Hello, hello.
Welcome. So I knew, Ian, that you would make a great guest on Mum Says It's My Turn. We are kindred spirits, both cinephiles, both avid gamers, both absolute legends. Maybe just you for that last one.
Oh, come on.
So you may have already caught from Ian's smooth southern drawl. Ian's not from my neck of the woods. But before we get into the meat of this episode, so to speak, we need to figure out who you are. And for that, we've got our quickfire questions. So number one, what's a video game that defined your childhood?
Oh, wow.
You can mention a few here, but you do have to pick just one.
Sure. So, God, that's a tough one. I mean, I think I've already mentioned this to you before, but probably the one that still resonates with me today that I just spent countless hours on was both Star Wars Battlefront games.
Yes.
My friend Chris introduced it to me, and we would just spend all day in his basement playing it. And then I eventually convinced my mom to buy it for me. And the first one, that is. And then I remember getting the second one on Christmas one year when I was probably 12 or 11. And so, yeah, the original Battlefronts, I should say,
yeah,
were a huge part of my childhood gaming experiences. A couple other that I'll throw out there. Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big one for me. Actually, the very first game I ever played, maybe not played, but kind of owned,
yeah,
I was going on a trip to Disney World.
Epic.
With my family. And in the airport, and it was probably a smart play by my dad at this point, he handed myself and my sister both Game Boys,
yes,
like, gifted it to us in the airport. And the game that I had was The Lion King.
Oh,
yeah, which is like an impossibly hard,
yes,
game. So I like messed around on the first, maybe second level for probably months and never got very far. But that was kind of my intro into gaming. You know, I was probably 6 or 7 or something.
Oh, I love that. I think it can't be understated how iconic the Battlefront games were. I think particularly for like our generation that grew up with the prequel trilogies, right? And those games were so addictive, so much fun, and like just bringing that world to life.
Yeah, and actually I still play it sometimes,
yeah, yeah,
when I'm just have nothing to do and bored. And you know, I love it because it's just one of those pick up and play,
yeah,
games, and obviously nostalgic for people like you and I. And mm-hmm, I think I saw something recently that maybe they had a new one supposed to be coming out.
Oh yeah,
maybe I'm wrong.
I just want them to remaster the old ones.
I know. You know, right? You know, the two new ones that have come out, they're okay,
yeah,
but you know, they just don't have that charm. And
the memes that came out of it as well, just like the simulations.
Oh gosh, yeah. Oh man, I still remember some of the commands.
Like, yeah.
Yes, sir. Right away, sir.
The British accent.
Oh, yeah.
All right. These are meant to be quick fire questions.
Oh, yeah. So I'm not doing so well.
Let's move on. So question two, what is your all-time favorite movie?
Oh, wow. Man, yeah. Quick fire questions. These are tough. You know, I'm one of those people that I love kind of the way a movie makes me feel, and I'm big on atmospheric movies.
Yeah.
I think if I had to choose one, and I'll probably choose one and then regret it later. Cool Hand Luke is definitely an all-time favorite of mine. Love Paul Newman.
Yeah.
Recently read his memoir. Yeah, that, and I'm obsessed with the Godfather movies, at least the first two. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I'll stick with Cool Hand Luke, though.
Yeah, those are respectable movies there. Cool Hand Luke, yeah, obviously being an absolute classic.
Absolutely.
Okay, next question. What's a game that you're playing right now?
Good question. I actually, it's an older game. I'm playing Brutal Legend. There's a, what the, like the dots over the U. So,
oh, right.
Yeah, so Brutal Legend, which is a Tim Schafer game, who also did Psychonauts and a couple other absolute classics. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's kind of an action game where you are a roadie from a band that gets sucked into this like somewhat medieval fantasy land, and you use your guitar and this axe that you find to pretty much save the day in this world. And yeah, it's it's a little janky, and but that's right up my alley.
Yeah,
so,
sounds yeah. great. Sounds very early noughties.
I think it was probably
late noughties,
mid to late 2009, 2008. But you know, you get Jack Black and some other rock legends in there, like Lemmy. So yeah, it's been a joy playing that.
Nice. Yeah, it was 2009 it came out, and it has a 97% approval rating on Google. So obviously one to check out if you haven't played it already. Last question, what's the best thing you've seen recently?
Oh, wow. I watch a ton of movies, so that's a tough one. The best movie I've seen in theaters this year was, I believe it was called Talk to Me?
Yeah.
Which I'm a big horror buff,
yeah.
And I just like the idea that it was two first time, I think they were brothers, filmmakers, who had been just like YouTube creators, and they made what I thought was the best horror film.
Well, I'm going to cut you off quickly. This is funny because you won't have heard the episode that just came out with Natalie.
Okay.
And I asked her what were the best things she saw recently, and she said the same movie.
Oh, no way. Yeah.
So that's obviously like we're doubling down on Talk to Me, guys. If you haven't seen it yet, you absolutely need to go.
Yeah, I mean,
it.
Two and two episodes, you know, it must be good.
Yeah.
I mean, I really enjoyed it. And so that's my favorite that I've seen in theaters. Outside of theaters, I saw this movie called Small Engine Repair.
Okay.
That was just absolutely incredible. And it has John Bernthal and Shea Whigham, and they both knock it out of the park, and it's a lot of fun. It's kind of one of those movies that is genreless,
right.
Kind of a thriller, comedy, quite sad, quite happy. It really blew me away, and I didn't expect it to be that great because I really hadn't heard of it, and definitely recommend to watch to
nice.
Pretty much anyone.
Yeah, I haven't heard of it either, so I'm going to have to give that one a watch. Obviously, love John Bernthal, he's a legend.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that was the quickfire questions. I would say you passed. You have been accepted.
I passed, but maybe not quickly enough.
Yeah, true, true. Maybe Natalie can save it in the edit.
There you go. Thank you, Nat, in advance.
So you've been a big supporter of the podcast since before we even released the first episode. Are you enjoying it so far?
Absolutely.
Everything you ever dreamed of?
Yeah. I think it's great, and it's always fun learning new things.
Yeah, well, actually, speaking of learning new things, you messaged me a few interesting things after listening to some of the episodes. So, for example,
right.
a few episodes back, I was complaining that cinemas never have intermissions anymore, which is sad because my bladder ain't what it used to be. And you had some interesting insider knowledge, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and I meant to do a little bit more research so that I could be more prepared and but I'm part of this kind of a group chat of a bunch of theater owners and theater programmers and executive directors, and they've brought up this same question, especially for, you know, the long epics, 3.5 hours,
sure.
Oppenheimer and whatnot. But if I remember correctly, it was something to do with the distributors pretty much not allowing theaters to have an intermission, you know, and I'm not sure of the logic behind it or if there is any.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I guess there's a level of immersion which is potentially disrupted by stopping a movie halfway through and getting up and walking out, but I would say that's less than the ruined immersion from having like a bursting bladder and having to walk out anyway and miss 5 minutes of a film, you know.
Sure. And also for theaters, it's not ideal because in the past, you know, theaters depended on intermission to up their sales of concessions and drinks. And,
yeah.
You know, they would put on like a little ad that was like, oh, go get a soda, go get a hot dog, go get French fries and whatever, which, you know, certainly helped them out. So I'm sure it's got to always be in a theater's best interest to have an intermission. But I'd be cool with intermissions even for shorter movies.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have to start a petition, I think.
Bring yeah, I think we could get some signatures.
Yeah, I think so.
At least a couple.
Also, back in episode 3, when we were talking about movies adapted from video games, I mentioned a fellow called Uwe Boll, who is personally responsible for a large number of the, let's say, substandard adaptations over the years. And you told me a pretty good anecdote. I wonder if you can retell it.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, and he kind of has a reputation of butchering the like IP for a bunch of games that he directs for movies.
Yeah.
But yeah, so critics were coming after him and pretty much butchering him the way that I am right now. And he challenged them. He was like, all right, well, why don't you come into a boxing ring and fight me? Which is, you know, quite an insane thing to say just for someone criticizing your work. And so he invited these, you know, scrawny little critics into a boxing ring and beat the absolute hell out of these guys. And it's on YouTube. You know, you can go watch Uwe Boll fighting a couple different critics, and, you know, they all like give up after like a couple minutes because, you know, Uwe Boll is actually kind of a big dude, absolutely taking his rage out on these critics
that is incredible.
That butchered his stuff.
We had planned to just rail on Uwe Boll's filmography for this episode, but I'm a little scared now.
Yeah, I know, right?
So fortunately, we have a backup. I was lucky enough to be in Chicago earlier this week, and I was luckier still to have been able to visit Mr. Beef, which is the famous Chicago sandwich joint that served as the inspiration for the incredible show The Bear. So I got to try their delicious hot Italian beef sandwich, which is what they're most well known for. By the way, if you're ever fortunate enough to find yourself ordering an Italian beef sandwich, you want to ask for it hot, sweet, and juicy. And you're just going to have to trust me on that one. It sounds deranged, but it was life-changing, honestly.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, yeah, you should be. So I got to speaking with the owner, a guy who, you know, doesn't spend much time in the kitchen and really just kind of enjoys chatting with the customers, which is very sweet. He let me know that the creator of the show, The Bear, a guy called Christopher Storer, he actually grew up going to Mr. Beef and hanging out there as a teenager and kicking around for his entire childhood, and basically just listening in to the guys working behind the kitchen, in quotes, bickering and cussing at each other. That's where he got the inspiration for the show. And I get it, right? There's a lot of drama and excitement in a kitchen environment. You always seem to get interesting characters working in professional kitchens. You know, it makes sense that there have been a number of great shows and movies that have been based on professional chefs. Plus, like I mentioned in a previous episode, I think people really enjoy watching food being prepared. There's something very satisfying about the process. So anyway, I thought we could take a look at some great movies and shows and maybe even a couple of games based on professional kitchens. And seeing as we've mentioned it already, let's start with The Bear. You've watched The Bear, right, Ian?
Yeah, absolutely. Great place to start. I'm a huge fan of The Bear, and I think maybe even I have a couple questions for you that are kind of popping into the old noggin about The Bear. No, nothing too crazy. Really, I always think of when I'd see, you know, the exterior in a movie or a show, are they using the actual interior of that building or are they using a set? You know, did it look like what the show makes?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, great question. They actually did shoot a number of the scenes in the actual place itself, and the owner told me that they are shutting down in a few weeks' time to do another week of filming for season 3. If you can recall the show, if you have seen it, there's, you know, specifically a couple of scenes where they have a family meal on a long table. So that is the dining room in Mr. Beef.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you get to sit at that table?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's 100%. Too cool.
Yeah, yeah, it was really cool. So if you haven't seen it, the first season came out in 2022. And then I also had season 2 as one of my highlights from 2023. The Bear follows a young, extremely accomplished chef who inherits a small sandwich shop from his brother as he looks to transform it into a more upscale establishment. And it's just like a very endearing show. I've mentioned before, it is quite stressful at moments.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Like, it's kind of hard to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the idea there has got to be, you know, making you feel like you're one of these workers that's having a stressful day and every minute that goes by is something new that pops up. And yeah, I mean, I certainly think they accomplish that and give you that sense of stress and fast-paced environment. And
yeah, for sure. But it's such a sweet show. It has great characters, great writing, great story arcs. I'm trying to think of some other standout episodes. I mean, again, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast already, but the Christmas episode, Fishes, is like one of the most intense episodes of TV.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, what an episode. Another one that stands out to me is kind of Richie's redemption arc.
Yeah, Forks.
Oh, great one.
Yeah, it's a really nice
If
episode.
You don't feel something from that episode, you know, you weren't paying attention or there's something wrong there, right?
I've never been so jazzed about a Taylor Swift song as I did watching that episode.
Yeah, when he's in the car and just belting away at it.
Yeah.
You just see him change and kind of get what he had been looking for in life, not only his job, but, you know, kind of purpose and meaning and a job that he actually cares about rather than just something where you clock in and clock out.
Yeah, it's very sweet, very good. Like I say, very well-written characters that you really find yourself caring about. I was reading, actually, that they didn't use any hand doubles. So oftentimes when you have food being prepared in a TV show or a movie, they will use a hand double to do the prep and the stuff like that.
Sure.
And they actually, all the actors did their own food prep in this show. And Jeremy Allen White also spent some time in a few kitchens, including Pajoli, which is a very famous Michelin star restaurant, which you love to see. You know, I like it when actors kind of get stuck in and, you know, try and learn the craft a little bit to be more convincing.
Yeah, that's certainly something that I've thought about. Like, how do any of these actors have, you know, experience working in a kitchen? And I know that I can't think of his name in the show, but I believe his real name is Matty Matteson. Yeah. I know that he's, you know, a
very accomplished chef.
Chef in his own right. And I'm sure that he lends a lot of consulting to the show. And
I'm sure he does.
You know, to help.
It is funny that he doesn't do any cooking in the show.
Yeah, I know, right? He's like the jack of all trades, like fixing stuff and kind of a comic relief.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving on the subject of stressful kitchen environments, have you seen the movie Boiling Point?
I'm not sure that I have.
So like most kitchen drama movies, this film is really just about the stressful manic nature of running a high-end restaurant. Basically, it all takes place over one evening. The evening gets increasingly chaotic, resulting in things, you know, essentially reaching a boiling point.
See what you did there.
Yeah, very clever name. It was released in 2021, has a 99% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Ooh.
The main character is struggling with addiction in this film, which also seems to be a bit of a recurring theme.
Yeah, I know, right?
Kitchen
Are
movies.
You explaining an episode of The Bear?
Yeah, exactly. And if you've seen the film, you'll have noticed that the film is shot as one continuous take.
The entire film?
The entire film is just one shot.
No way.
Yeah, as in, it's not that it's meant to look like one continuous take, like some other TV shows and movies have done with long shots. It actually was shot in one uninterrupted.
No way.
Yeah. So Stephen Graham is the big star on set for this film, and the producers couldn't get much time with him. And so they had originally scheduled 4 days for shooting. The idea being that they would do two takes a day for 4 days. But when they started shooting, it was right when COVID was getting bad. Mm. And they decided last minute that actually they didn't want to take any unnecessary risks with regards to COVID. So they cut it down to 2 days for filming.
Wow.
So an entire feature film shot in just 2 days. And they got 4 takes. And the third one was the one that they ended up choosing.
Wow. That is insane that the movie is one take. Is that... Am I naive here? Has that been done before?
I can't think that it has. I mean, I'm sure there have been some movies that have been just shot as one take before. But to execute it so well, and especially to have something like a kitchen environment, right, where there's so many moving parts, so many stressful things happening. I can only imagine that, like, the stress of trying to nail this take, because you've only got a limited amount of time.
I'm just thinking of, you know, I've worked in a couple kitchens in my past, and like the different things that go wrong, the fact that they were able to nail that. I know you said it took them, you know, 4 takes, but 2 days, and they ended up with one, sounds like pretty spectacular take. I mean, that's a hell of an accomplishment.
It is spectacular. And I mean, you know, actors do stage plays all the time, right, which are that long. So I guess for an actor, it's not completely foreign, but having worked on some much, much smaller productions, I just can't imagine the logistics of trying to nail that and everything look great. And especially with the content of the film, like some of the crazy stuff that happens, it's very, very respectable.
You've got to think some of the most difficult things there have to be just the camera operators and grips and people making sure they're in the right spot and getting the right angle and panning out. Or, you know, I haven't seen it, but it seems extremely difficult to pull that off.
Yeah. And just even operating a camera for 90 minutes is like, right? That's a workout. So another kitchen movie, which I saw kind of recently, is a movie called Burnt.
I'm striking out again. You introduced me as a cinephile.
You haven't seen any of these movies.
I haven't seen anything, right?
So Burnt was released back in 2015. To be honest, I hadn't seen it until recently either. I'd heard of it. It stars Bradley Cooper in the lead role. It also has Daniel Brühl in it, who's an actor I really enjoy. You'd recognize him from...
I actually have seen Burnt, Bastard. Now that you mentioned it.
Yeah? Okay, yeah. It's all coming flooding back.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's got Daniel Brühl in it, who some of you will know. It's also got a few decent cameos and smaller roles with Emma Thomas, Uma Thurman, Lily Jones, and Alicia Vikander, all having only one or two scenes. Bradley Cooper, who is supposedly a bit of a cooking enthusiast himself, he worked in one of Gordon Ramsay's 3 Michelin star restaurants in London.
Are you saying before or like...
prepping for the role.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I think I saw in an interview with Gordon Ramsay that Bradley Cooper was like, teach me how to cook. And Gordon Ramsay was like, we can't teach you how to cook, but I can kind of show you how to, you know, plate food. And so when you see him plating the food, he's pretty convincing in the movie. But his character in this movie walks a very fine line between like that arrogant but brilliant and then just a straight up asshole, basically.
Agreed.
I'm pleased to say, after recently being quite disparaging of Bradley Cooper, that he is very good in this film.
Was that Maestro or?
Yeah. But so in the Oscars predictions episode we did a few weeks back, I said that I really hated Maestro. Yeah.
I'm on the same page with you there.
Yeah, it was just dreadful. And not his performance. His performance was really good, but the movie was not fun to watch.
And yeah, I think his performing was fine as well, but you know, I came out of it having not enjoyed it, and I don't think having gotten much from it other than, you know, seeing someone in my mind just putting too much into a passion project that didn't, you know, give enough to, you know, the viewers.
I completely agree. So at the start of Burnt, Bradley Cooper is like going around London trying to assemble this ragtag group of cooks to staff his dream kitchen. And whilst we were watching it, I was like, oh, this feels like a kitchen version of Magnificent Seven, which is the classic Western where the main character is assembling a misfit group of renegades to help defend a town. And then later in the movie, Bradley Cooper's character is like, have you ever seen Seven Samurai? I want my kitchen to be like that. So the resemblance was clearly intentional. And the filmmaker obviously wanted to draw attention to the fact that that's what he was doing.
Yeah, if you had been thinking that earlier in the film, I'm thinking of the Leonardo DiCaprio meme where he's like,
oh,
pointing at the screen.
What is it?
Exactly.
Great meme. This movie, the food is like super, super fine dining. So in the movie, Bradley Cooper's character is trying to go for his 3rd Michelin star. So like I mentioned earlier, I love food prep in movies.
Sure.
And in my Perfect Scenes episode I did a while back, I talked about the cheeseburger scene in The Menu being one of my favorite scenes.
Man.
And something about when it becomes super fine dining, it's not as appealing to me to see that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that. I'm always cool with a hamburger and really hot dog, you know. I'm an easy guy when it comes to food. So
actually, I think the movie Chef, directed by and starring Jon Favreau, has to be up there.
Oh, absolutely. I watched it on Netflix or something a few years ago, and it was just something I kind of put on late at night, and it absolutely blew me away. And
yeah,
certainly a feel-good experience and quite relatable too. Even maybe if you're not, you know, in the industry or a chef.
Interestingly, this movie came out around the same time as Burnt, and supposedly there was a bit of an altercation between the studio that owned the rights for Burnt, because they had wanted to call the movie Chef and they apparently tried to sue, you know, Jon Favreau into giving up the name Although I think we can assume they didn't succeed.
Yeah, right. I mean, I don't know how exactly that works, but I was speaking with a filmmaker in Wilmington where I live.
Yeah.
And she just came out with an awesome film called A Song for Emo Gene. a little weird title, and it's because originally it had another name, and then another like somewhat big film was released with, you know, the running name she had been using for 4 or 5 years.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, so she lost the name, and she actually crowdsourced, used all of her crowdfunders and kind of supporters for her film to come up with a new name, and A Song for Emo Gene was it. Another movie I'd certainly recommend.
Yeah, there you go. Go and check that out. So this movie follows Jon Favreau's character. He's ousted, let's say, from his fine dining restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and he decides to open a food truck and sell Cuban sandwiches, very appealing looking Cuban sandwiches.
Oh, yeah.
Like we mentioned, it's a very feel-good film, not too much conflict, you know, a nice love story to the various food cultures in America. I think that's one of the things I really like it. So they do like a bit of a road trip in this movie and visit different parts of the country and sample different food specialities.
I think, you know, it's probably been inspirational for people in the industry. You know, food trucks, at least here in the States, have been popping up left and right the past decade. And it's pretty incredible that you're able to get really great food at a cheap food truck rather than, you know, having to go and sit down and get a reservation.
So interestingly, Roy Choi, who is an LA-based chef who was kind of widely credited with having started the food truck craze in America, he was a consultant on this movie.
Oh.
And actually, in the scene towards the end where you see all of the food trucks, you can actually see his food truck sitting in the background. So that was a pretty cool little cameo from him.
Yeah, absolutely. Love stuff like that.
Yeah. In Chef also, they shot some scenes at Franklin's Barbecue in Austin. I don't know if you remember that, which is a pretty famous barbecue place. They win a bunch of awards every year, meant to be the best. And I did actually go there one time when I was in Austin, and the queue was literally like half a mile long at 10:30 in the morning. It was insane.
See, I got a bone to pick here now, because where I'm from, North Carolina, we're known for having a different type of barbecue, but, you know, the best barbecue in the world. So, you know, we kind of have like a little rivalry with
Texas boys,
and I think maybe Kentucky or, you know, Lexington, something like that. But but I'll let it slide this time.
Okay, we appreciate it. So the movie also stars Sofia Vergara, John Leguizamo, Robert Downey Jr., Dustin Hoffman, Scarlett Johansson.
Quite the star-studded cast.
It really is. And also Oliver Platt is in this movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He gives Jon Favreau money for his restaurant, which is funny because he also plays a character in The Bear and also gives money for their restaurant in that.
Yeah.
So
he's great in The Bear.
He really is. Yeah, he's a great character, great actor. So like I mentioned already, I spoke about the movie The Menu in my Perfect Scenes episode. If you haven't seen this movie, I think it's a really great movie. I wanted to mention it again today because it's the only film on the list where it's a horror movie that's based on like a kitchen environment.
Right.
I mean, it's a horror comedy, but it's definitely still a horror. It centers around Ralph Fiennes' character, who is a brilliant chef who's kind of lost his identity and fallen out of love with the industry. So he looks to enact his revenge on the people who he considers to have ruined it for him. I really thought this movie was great. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed it a lot, and really enjoyed Nicholas Holt. Is that his name? His character, knowing, without giving away too much, knowing what he was getting into.
I know.
And still going through with it.
He is like just the worst character.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, but that was a really cool film. Like I say, I won't linger on it too much because I have talked about it recently. But for a very different change of pace, Ratatouille.
Oh.
Now, for a long time, this was my favorite animated movie. And it still might be, honestly. I mean, it's really up there, I think, as one of my favorite films. If you've not seen Ratatouille, it's a Pixar movie about a rat who wants to be a successful chef. And through a fortuitous turn of events, he finds that he's able to control the motor function of a hapless heir to a great but languishing French restaurant in Paris. And, you know, you can imagine how it plays out from there. This film has got a great voice acting cast, including Patton Oswalt, Will Arnett, who's done a lot of great voice work, including Lego Batman, of course. Peter O'Toole, Lawrence of Arabia himself. And my favorite voice performance from this movie is Ian Holm, Bilbo Baggins, who does the voice of Skinner, the diminutive antagonist of this film. Such a great film.
Yeah, absolutely. I've actually never had ratatouille.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
What's funny is the version of the dish that they have in the film is nothing like a very traditional ratatouille. The chef, Thomas Keller, consulted on this movie, and he actually designed that version of ratatouille, the one that we see towards the end of the film. But it takes about 4 hours to prepare or something like that. So I don't know that it's like super traditional version of the dish.
Sure.
But yeah, that's a very appealing one, a very delicious looking meal. And actually all of the food in that film looks really nice.
Oh, it's, I know, right?
Prepared really well. Anthony Bourdain actually said he called this one of his favorite food movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that, but I'm a huge Anthony Bourdain fan. And, you know, back at maybe almost a decade ago, I was always watching, what is it, Parts Unknown and his various different shows. And that's almost surprising to me because the thought of Anthony Bourdain, this like tough guy, chef watching an animated Pixar movie, just, you know, it seems funny to me.
It does feel wrong, yeah. Actually, specifically, I haven't watched a ton of anime, but I've seen in anime that if there's ever food, it's always animated to be ultra appealing, like incredible looking food you've ever seen.
Yeah, if you watch anime, you'll probably end up hungry. And, you know, I don't watch a ton, but the ones that I have, and, you know, I've kind of watched some of the more mainstream, I guess you would call it, or generic, you know, Cowboy Bebop. And
yeah,
recently I've been watching Space Dandy, which is directed by the same guy that created Cowboy Bebop. But almost the biggest theme in both of those shows is food. In yeah. Space Dandy, every episode is him getting money so that he can get food. He spends all his money on food.
I can relate.
He eats at this restaurant called Boobies, which is like, it's made to be like a farce of Hooters. You know? And he just goes there and eats ramen. And, you know, similar in Cowboy Bebop, they almost have no money in that show as well. But when they do get money, it's going to food.
I love that.
And they are always showing this ramen. And I typically have some, you know, in my cabinet. And a lot of times I go and end up, you know, making some for myself and just wishing it was half as good as, you know, what they're probably having in this fictional show.
Yeah. Like I say, I think just food in TV and movies is so appealing. I also was thinking before when I was prepping for this episode, thinking about how Brad Pitt is always eating in movies, right? Have you ever noticed that?
Actually, now that you mention it, I think I do remember some Brad Pitt.
Yeah, think about like the Ocean's movies especially.
Sure, he's that's what eating. I was thinking of.
It's like busy acting, right? If you have something to do with your hands, like smoking,
sure,
or, you know, some other habit, it makes your character seem more realistic. But yeah, I think it's super interesting, the idea that kitchens are exciting places, they're dramatic places. You even get a bunch of video games which are centered around working in a kitchen. You know, off the top of my head, I can think of like Plate Up, which is really fun. The Overcooked games. I don't know if you ever played like Papa's Pizzeria or any of those little web-based games.
It's funny, actually, my girlfriend, when she's like stressed out, she plays this game on her phone called Good Pizza, Great Pizza. It's interesting, you know, that people enjoy, you know, simulating cooking for others.
Yeah.
As just something to pass time and get enjoyment out of.
Yeah.
Not even getting paid to do, you know, yeah, pretty much doing a job for
doing
the enjoyment
a job
of
free.
It, right?
Yeah, it's like, so true. But yeah, it is funny that is something that so many games seem to be focused around. Well, all of this talk of food is getting me slightly peckish. I hope you guys all enjoyed today's episode. If there is a foodie movie or TV show that I didn't mention that you enjoyed, make sure you let me know what it is. Thank you, Ian, for coming on today. Hopefully you'll come back again in the future.
Of course. Looking forward to it. It's been fun.
Yeah. We'll see you all next time. Au revoir.